Need me to call the
Excuse
meeting
me,
to order?
you do have a quorum.
Oh, we do. Oh, but well, okay. We'll wait for her anyway. Okay, so let's call the meeting to order at 9:36. And I think I want to do the approval of the minutes first. Has everybody read the minutes?
Yep, so moved.
Okay, great. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Possible discussion with authorized neighborhood council representatives. Do we have anything?
None have been presented.
Great. Okay. Because there are going to be four of us here, I think we should wait for Commissioner Orden to do the action items. She's going to be here in approximately 5 to 7 minutes. So maybe we can go through some of the information items. And I think we've had some pretty dense agendas in the past, and I think it would be nice to go through both for all of ourselves to remind us of some of the other issues that the ethics staff works so hard on, and also for the public to hear. So let's look at information item number 7. Is someone presenting on that? Oh, hi, Tyler.
Morning.
Morning.
Well, for the record, my name is Tyler Joseph. I am the Senior Policy Analyst with the Ethics Commission. And item 7 is a recusal review of Aura Vasquez, who is a member of the Board of Water and Power Commissioners. And after taking a look at the recusals that she submitted, they were all related to official travel, and there were no financial conflicts, so we did not believe that this rose to the level that required a full recusal review. So for that reason, this is being presented as an informational item and not an action item.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Tyler.
Are you
presenting on any other information items?
I am. We have a full recusal review in item 6.
Okay.
And we also have the policy and legislation report, so whichever order you'd like to take those up in.
Is it okay if we go out of order since we're already? Do you want to do you have your notes on item number 10 that you could present to us?
I do, yes.
Let's be efficient.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any demo. Okay. Yeah, do you want to present on item 10? So we're just doing the information items while you're
great, thank you.
So item 10 is the policy and legislation report. And just to provide you a quick update with what we have going on there, for the campaign finance laws, last Friday, council adopted a few of the changes to the administrative code, which are moving forward. And some of the other changes that are going to be made through the municipal code are going back to the rules committee, which will likely take those up fairly soon. The reason that they were done separately is that there's a 60-day action limit on the administrative code, so they move forward with those changes. And the ones that are getting kicked back to rules are going to be discussed, we anticipate, fairly soon.
What does fairly soon mean?
We're not exactly sure. They're not scheduled yet.
Okay.
But because they were taken up in council and discussed and sent back, it is on their minds, so we don't think that that'll lag. So
great.
It should be fairly soon.
And I would just add that it will probably be November.
Okay.
So in the next 3 weeks-ish.
Perfect. Okay. Does anybody have any questions on the policy and legislation report? Okay. Thanks, Tyler. I know you say you have number 6, but we'll do the information items first.
Sure, absolutely. And I just want to note really quickly that the conflict of interest code review that we sent to the Economic and Workforce Development Department is scheduled for rules on Friday. So they'll be taking a look at that also.
Okay. That's great.
Do you have any questions?
I don't. Does anybody else? Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. So let's do information item number 8. Just stick with information items.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Blanca Perea, Campaign Program Analyst, joined by Ezra Bryant, fellow Campaign Program Analyst.
Good morning.
Morning.
Exciting times for campaign finance. We are in the midst of 3 fundraising windows. The city 2020 fundraising window opened on September 3rd, and to date we have 9 candidates who have filed to run. There are 2 open seats on the ballot, districts 10 and 14. The LAUSD 2020 election, the fundraising window, sorry, for the 2020 LAUSD election will be open by December 3rd. The school board has also called for a special election to fill the vacancy in District 5. The fundraising window for that opened September 26th. The primary election will be held on March 5th, 2019, and if needed, a runoff will be held May 14th of 2019. To date, there are 9 candidates running to fill the vacancy. We will be holding a training for those candidates tomorrow.
Oh, great.
If you have some questions.
Yeah. How many are signed up?
For the training?
Uh-huh.
As of this morning, I believe we have 9 attendees.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Will you be having future trainings?
We will. Our goal is to have everybody trained as soon as possible. So those who cannot attend tomorrow will be trained at a later date.
Would it be possible to get some knowledge of that so we could attend?
Yes.
We've in the past requested the training materials and received them, and that was very helpful. So maybe we could get them sent as well.
Yes.
For the new members. I'm just curious, do you add case studies to the trainings? Examples of things that, okay. just
of what to do and what not to do.
Right, exactly. Based on.
Sometimes anonymous examples are helpful
yeah.
In the training.
So I know that the 2020 window opened, but obviously the election's not for a long time. As people sign up, are you planning on holding any trainings in the near future?
Yes, we will. With the LAUSD election, uh-huh. The special opening so soon.
Right.
Right now, our priority is to get the candidates for the special election trade, but we are looking into soon holding trainings for the 2020.
Okay. Just because if people are, my concern is because people are already signed up, so that means that they can probably be raising, which means they can be making mistakes.
Yes, one of the things that plays into this is the campaign finance changes that are before council. And so for the city elections, at least, we want to hold off and make sure we understand exactly what the law is before we give trainings.
It's a really good point.
Yes, and we do direct all our candidates to the candidate guides that we have up on our website, and they're always able to call us at any time. We're more than happy to help them with any questions they have.
Right, and I've heard from lots of people that the Ethics Commission staff is extremely, extremely responsive, so thank you for that. Does anyone have any further questions? No? All right, let's move on.
Thank you.
Let's move on to information item number 9, which is the pre-confirmation statements of economic interests. Hi.
Good morning. I'm Alexandria Latrania, Ethics Program Manager, and I just wanted to start off by saying that today is actually my last meeting with Ethics Commission. Aww. I will be moving on next week, but I wanted to extend my gratitude to you for being such great stewards of the very important mission that the Ethics Commission has, and it's been a passion of mine for many years working here, so I'm grateful to you for carrying on that mission.
Thank you. I'll say to you personally, thanks always for the reminders to get my SEIs in. and then if I've ever been late, the reminders to continue to get it in.
I don't think you've been late, so
right.
You're okay.
So I really, I just appreciate all of your hard work and your dedication to the city.
Thank you very much. Okay, the item before you is item number 9, it's an informational item, and it just summarizes the pre-confirmation statements that we transmitted to City Council since our last meeting. The reports are included in your binders. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
It's obviously a busy time.
Yes. We call it pre-confirmation season, so there are 3 of us who work on these, but my team is exceptional in just getting out those reminders to people and helping them file, but it's a great time for us to interface with the commissioners throughout the city.
I don't remember a time that we've had as many in a single meeting.
Yes.
Confirmation.
A lot of reappointments this time of year. Any questions? No. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Why don't we hold off on the executive director's report till later, and move back to our action items. So, item number four, looks like we have no public comment.
Good morning, commissioners. Kirsten Pickenpah, acting director of enforcement. With me is investigator Michael Louthian, who is the lead investigator on this case. Item four is a proposed stipulation in the matter of Jose Flores. Mr. Flores is a city parking manager who misused his position and authority to store three personal vehicles in a city parking facility for extended periods of time without payment. Mr. Flores has admitted to three violations of 49.55A and has agreed to pay a penalty of $16,705 for the misuse of his authority. And we recommend that the stipulation be approved. If you have any questions, I would be happy to try to answer them.
Sure. Can you just state do you have an idea of what the salary range is for a parking manager? Is that a one?
That's public information, and Mr. Flores does have a six-figure salary. It's approximately $103,000.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions regarding the matter?
I'd just like you to talk us through the balancing test you went through and why you came up with that amount of money. I did notice that he did represent himself, that he did not have a lawyer. But if you could tell us a little bit about how you balance these factors that you set out in the report.
Mr. Flores was very cooperative during the investigation, and he admitted that he had parked these vehicles in the city facility. He gave us information about the period of time that each vehicle was parked there. We attempted to determine the lost revenue to the city. We can't do that with a precise figure because he was not able to tell us and we weren't able to determine exactly how many days he was using the parking facility, there are monthly parking passes available, and he could have purchased a monthly parking pass for each vehicle, which would have allowed him to park in the facility as often or as infrequently as he wanted to. We thought that would be the most fair way to assess the loss to the city. The maximum potential penalty using that approach is $33,710, and the penalty that we offered based on his cooperation, his lack of prior enforcement history, and his desire to resolve this matter quickly was 50% of that amount.
I'll say that I also noticed that he didn't have any kind of representation. And also, as I was looking at this, you know, some of the things that I thought about were, one, that he served the city for approximately 18 years. I know that when we settle in stipulation that there's information that we're probably not able to receive, so we don't know the full picture of and I know there are probably like statutes of limitations, so we don't know the full range of how long he actually parked the car. I will say that for all of the things that come before us and that we consider, that this seems like he clearly violated the charter. He clearly, was taking money out of the pocket of the city, but it's one of the least egregious things that I've seen, especially considering, some of the, let's call them players, right, that come before us, who are not civil servants or who have stolen or who have laundered. And so I was trying to think about, you know, we use this when someone is forthright, when someone is willing to settle, we use this usually like a 50% equation. But in recent cases, we've also used a 75% equation. So we go up because someone is coming before us for a second or a third time. So, and in the past, I know that, I'm not trying to make more work, but it occurs to me that I would be interested to see if anybody would be open to a 25% penalty. I worked out the numbers, and I know that means that you guys have to go back, and I apologize, and I don't even know if anybody's open to it, but it would be approximately $8,352 as opposed to the $16,000. I know he gave you guys a check, but I don't know what his knowledge of the law is, right? And because he didn't have any kind of representation, that's something that's concerning. I'm sure he wants to get this over with, but I also think that we could be more lenient.
Thank you, Commissioner Oberstein. I would like to mention that Mr. Flores was aware of his department policy, which limited employees to parking in the facility only during their shift. They were not allowed to park overnight. He also did take our online ethics training in 2016 and 2017, so he should have been aware of the law. He was certainly aware of his policy, and I just wanted to put that out there as well.
Great.
And I think there are things that you have done in your investigation in terms of other factors, since you were dealing with him personally. I have some of those same feelings that this is not precisely the kinds of violations that we're used to dealing with. But it seems to me that when you went through this and balanced it, that I think you came up with a fair decision because of the long-term employment and the knowledge. Every day he had to have known those cars should not have been there, and that there is a rule against that. And so I was comfortable with it, though I do find it a very sad case.
And it is true that his activity, he has admitted that he had parked the vehicles there maybe as much as 9 years. However, our stipulation looks back at the time period within our statute of limitations, so it only addresses the loss to the city during that period of time.
And what is that statute of limitations?
It's a four-year statute.
Okay. That's helpful for me. And if the rest of the commission is comfortable with the number, I'm also comfortable with it.
This is a challenging one for me. Actually, it's for the same reasons, I think, because we're talking about a different kind, in some ways, situation. It's not a high-level political actor with high-level representation. It's a civil servant who's served the city. It seems like it's possible from this, we don't know, he might end up losing his job, which if it's appropriate, it's appropriate. But I think I came in really wanting to hear where my fellow commissioners were on this, because I wanted to really understand. You know, I actually did inquire with the staff to find out a little bit more, because it landed like, for me, I think the seriousness of the activity is clear, and I take it seriously, and the culpability is clear as well. I think it seems that the amount of the penalty is not at issue, but at least in the sense that there's not a claim of hardship, a request for payment plan, the payment was paid already. It's not I initially thought it was maybe someone who was in a different financial position. So that matters. So now at this point, it's considering maybe the precedent being set by the amount, considering maybe other folks who are repeat offenders on different kinds of violations but end up paying less. So those are the feelings. So I wasn't sure how to bring them up, but I found it interesting that some of the other commissioners have similar views. So I was also thinking maybe more for precedent than I think is required in this case, but would be and this is the kind of area where I would say we could use discretion to go less than the half 50% formula when there's other cases where we could go more for those repeat non-cooperative repeat offender folks.
Thank you, Commissioner.
And I wish that somebody would have caught it, and I would hope there's better oversight, because by the time it gets here, it's been 9 years, and that's why this isn't our role, because these things should be caught sooner.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you for all of your comments and consideration. Thank you for your work.
Okay. So is everybody comfortable with the $16,000 since he's put a payment on hold?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Then do you want to move to – or I'm happy to move to. Okay. So I move to approve the stipulation as it stands at $16,705.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye. Or no.
You opposed? Nay. Okay. All right.
Just for the listening public, to make clear how the commission voted, do you want to state it, or do you want me to
do a roll call, or
either a roll call or just stating?
Okay. Yeah. For the record, commissioners Orden, Oberstein, and Davis voted to support the stipulation, and Commissioner Campos voted against the stipulation. So just going forward, I think because he submitted the money and he didn't state economic hardship, and for the purpose of like getting this moving forward, like I'll say that I agree, but like just thinking about a 25% when something is not as, when it's not laundering or, you know.
Thank you, Commissioner Oberstein. I think that obviously that would be a deviation from the policy that we've, the practice that we've been applying in proposing penalties, and any guidance that you can give us on the types of factors, such as the circumstances in this case, that would be appreciated.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
And thank you for your work.
Can I just say that I don't envy your position, because in going through this, even though I voted as I did, I'm very conflicted, and I know that you're working very, very hard to be fair, and so the commission agreed, and so justice has been served. So thank you. It's tough.
The next item is action item number 5, the selection of hearing officers, and. Do you guys want to sum it up? And then we have a public comment from Mr. Hertz.
Sure. Again, Kirsten Pickenpaw, Acting Director of Enforcement. This is Marisol Aguayo. She is the lead investigator on this case. Item 5 is an action item requiring the selection of hearing procedure in the matter of Eugene Day. Mr. Day is a former city plumbing inspector who is accused of participating in unauthorized outside employment and misusing his position to benefit himself and others.
Great. Mr. Hertz, do you want to come and give public comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Bradley Hertz of the Sutton Law Firm, newly substituting in as counsel for Respondent Eugene Day. And we just wanted to specify that option 1, which is the usual way that these things go in terms of referring to the Office of Administrative Hearings to appoint an ALJ, would be suitable in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Hertz. Does anyone have any thoughts or opinions about the direction?
I have often thought that it would be good for the Ethics Commission to personally participate on occasion. Obviously, it's the administrative officer that gives us a sense of expertise and ability. I personally, as I've shared, I've taken on a new responsibility, and I know that I would not be able to personally handle something like this. But it is something I think that we should consider on a regular basis. I think as we hear when we work on stipulations, we do have strong feelings about enforcement, and I think it will be good at some time, whether it's this one or not, to personally participate.
I absolutely agree, Commissioner Orden. In fact, in the past, we did have a public hearing where I think it was our commission president at the time, presided over a matter, and it was extremely informative, a lot of work. But also, I think it was great for the public to hear. I had initially thought, who better to reside over the matter than you? And knowing that you don't have the time commitment, I think at this point, given sort of some of the newness of our other commissioners, and unless someone wants to volunteer, I would move at this time to select an outside entity to provide an individual hearing officer. Are you okay with that?
I agree for the same reasons. A lot of us are still fairly new, and yes, I think an expert outside officer makes sense.
Okay. Okay. All right. So I move for the first option to have an outside entity select to provide an individual hearing officer in the matter of Eugene Day.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. So moved. And then our final action item is a review of recusals by Board of Water and Power Commissioner Mel Levine.
One more time for the record, I am Tyler Joseph, the Senior Policy Analyst with the Ethics Commission. Item 6 before you is a recusal review of Mr. Mel Levine, who, as stated, is the President of the Board of Water and Power Commissioners. President Levine has been the subject of 3 previous recusal reviews, each of which concluded that his conflicts were continuing but not significant. For this review, the staff looked at each of the instances in which President Levine recused himself from the DWP board, and we believe that, again, here, while the issues giving rise to these recusals may be continuing, they are not significant in terms of number or impact. And for that reason, we would recommend that no divestment be required, and we propose adopting the resolution in Attachment D for that purpose. And I would also note that President Levine and the DWP board staff were very responsive and very helpful and polite, so we certainly appreciate that.
I would move to accept your recommendation.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
So moved. Thank you, Taylor. Okay. So let's do the executive director's report now, and then we can move to item number 12.
Isn't there a second one?
These? We did all of these.
We did all of those before. Okay, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As we heard from the Cracker Jack campaign team, we are already well into campaign season with several fundraising windows open all at once, so we are very busy on that front. It is also budget season, and we will be presenting the budget.
We just got our budget, I guess.
Yes. It's an annual event that we get to participate in. But our budget request is due in just about a month, in the middle of November, and we will be requesting 5 additional positions, 3 for education purposes to beef up our outreach and communication staff, and 2 for project assistance. We actually have no administrative staff, no permanent administrative staff, and our work is largely cyclical based on deadlines in the law and things like election season and calendar years, and so our needs move from program to program, and having a couple of floater personnel who can assist where the demand is would be very useful for us, even in terms of things like scanning boxes of documents for audit purposes. So we would be very well served by those 5 additional staff members.
I certainly agree with that, and I know that you're putting those new people in the places that you feel absolutely most necessary, but I think all of us are still concerned, and I know you are, about the backlog on the audit reports. Earlier you've approved the earlier audit reports, and some of them were a long time ago.
Yes, that is very true. However, we are planning to finish up the current audit cycle by the end of this calendar year. So we will be starting on the 2017 audit cycle at the beginning of next year. And we have added audit staff to positions in the recent years. And that has made a huge difference in our ability to move forward. It was an unfortunate combination of events where we had the largest set of mandatory audits required in the history of the Ethics Commission at the same time that the city was going through a severe budget crisis, and we had 2 auditors on staff to handle that for a number of years. And so that has had ripple effects, and it just takes so much time to get through an audit, and when you have nearly 100 audits that have to be done for an audit cycle and 2 people to do it, it takes a lot of time. And we routinely say to the people who make decisions about our budget and that it's very important for both candidates and the public to have more timely input about how their campaigns were run so that candidates can avoid future mistakes and so that the public can be informed when they go to vote. So we are mostly caught up, and we plan actually to be done with the 2017 audit cycle before the 2020 audit cycle starts up. So by the end of the next election, we are hoping to be caught up. But yes, you're right. It is a serious concern when we are that far behind. Yeah, and the audit team has worked very hard for many years to get us caught up.
No question about that at all. Yeah. It's just there comes a point that the body needs resources.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
I want to agree with Commissioner Worden. I think it's great that you're requesting 5 more staff. I hope that the council hears you, especially given some of the changes that we've seen presented before the council over the last year. And with the consolidation of elections and how, LAUSD is having a special, which got announced something like a month and a half ago, and already there are 9 candidates. So the more education we can do, the more proactive we can be in educating the public, I think the more efficient we can also be. And so any way that I think everybody on this commission would say, any way that we can be helpful to help support that, support those 5 staff members, we would like to be.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And anybody who is interested in attending budget meetings or budget hearings, I would love the company. I will keep you posted on when we have more information about those dates. It won't be until probably February to May is the intensity of the time period. But I will let you know. And absolutely, I would very much appreciate that support. Thank you.
Once the budget is approved, if the budget is approved, hopefully it will be, how quickly do you think you would be able to staff up?
Well, we are highly unique in the city in that all of our staff are exempt from civil service. So we can be a lot more agile than many departments can be because we don't go through the civil service process like they do. The one thing that I would mention is that typically when new positions are given, they are not fully funded for the year because decision makers know that it does take some time, particularly when you're going through the civil service process, to fill those positions. So typically 6 month or 9 month funding is provided in the first year that a position is added to a department. So we can act a little more quickly than our budget might allow. It could be that we would get these positions and not be able to fill them until September or January of the next fiscal year, but we will fill them. It will be a very high priority to fill them just as quickly as we have funding.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
No? All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Executive Director. All right. We are now moving to item number 12, which is
Question. I think, would you want to do your general public comment before you go into closed session since we have to close?
Yeah, I didn't know that we could, but I would be happy to. We have one general public comment item from Carolina Goodman. Hi.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I'm here on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Los Angeles, and I want to thank you for all the work that you've done on campaign finance reform, which is moving its way through council now. Last August, the Ethics Commission tabled a discussion about developer donations. We understand it's a complex issue. It's an important one. We look forward to finding a solution to neutralize potential influence of big money. Another thing near and dear to the League's heart is a public forum where candidates face each other to inform constituents why their platforms would serve their districts best. The language in the current ordinance says the candidate understands that the candidate must either participate in a debate with one or more opponents or conduct a town hall meeting. Town hall meeting means an event conducted by a participating candidate at which the public is able to ask candidate questions and which is open to the public, the media, and other candidates. The meeting of town hall needs clarification in order to avoid becoming a campaign rally. Also, the town hall should be conducted by a nonpartisan organization, not conducted by a participating candidate. Also, open to the public and other candidates does not invite opposing candidates to share the stage. They could be sitting in the audience because of the language that we have in the ordinance. We hope that these corrections can be made in time for the 2020 elections. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we'll go into our closed session item. Did you want to say something first?
No, I was going to just state for the record that the commission will be going into closed session for a conference with legal counsel as stated on agenda item number 12 pursuant to government code section 54956.9D1. Thank you. Before we do that, you can take any public comment that is asked for on this closed session item.
Great. It doesn't seem like we have any public comment on this item, unless someone would like to submit it now on Parker versus City. Seeing none, let's move into closed session.
Okay. We need to go off air and clear the room.
Clear the room. Yeah.